everyone, and no one can deny that it's real. And when you hear me call, come crashing to the wall, you just can't doubt the things that you feel. So lift me up, the time is come to sing and give up everything. Oh, lift for the King. Fight against the rules, genius and fool, are born to labor under the laws, yeah. For each man's a choice, reject it or rejoice, the vision that the prophets saw. So lift me up, the time is and give up everything. Oh, live for the King.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 24th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access and the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, let's see. We're going to look at our tonight's scripture reading. Okay, we're in the book of Hebrews. Last week we read chapter 6. This week we'll be picking up reading in chapter 7. So Hebrews chapter 7, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 7. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by interpretation king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. And verily, they that are of the sons of Levi, who receive the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes of the people according to the law, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. But he, whose descent is not counted from them, received tithes of Abraham, and blessed him that had the promises. And without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. And here, men that die receive tithes, but there he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. And, as I may so say, Levi also, who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham, for he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. If, therefore, perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. For he of whom these things are spoken pertaineth to another tribe, of which no man gave attendance at the altar. For it is evident that our Lord sprang out of Judah, of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning priesthood. And it is yet far more evident, for that after the similitude of Melchizedek there ariseth another priest, who is made not after the law of a carnal commandment, but after the power of an endless life. For he testifieth, Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. For there is verily a disannulling of the commandment going before, for the weakness and unprofitableness thereof. For the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did, by the which we draw nigh unto God. And inasmuch as not without an oath he was made priest, for those priests were made without an oath, but this with an oath, by him that said unto him, The Lord swear and will not repent, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, by so much was Jesus made a surety of a better testament. And they truly were many priests, because they were not suffered to continue by reason of death. But this man, because he continueth ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. For such an high priest became us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who needeth not daily, as those high priests, to offer up sacrifice, first for his own sins, and then for the people's. For this he did once, when he offered up himself. For the law maketh men high priests, which have infirmity. But the word of the oath, which was since the law, maketh the Son, who is consecrated forevermore.
Right. I just let everybody know the queue is open. Right now there's nobody in it, so if anybody has a question or a comment, now's the time to get into the queue. Terry, do we have any announcements for this evening or any questions?
I don't know of any announcements, but I do have a few questions.
Okay.
Here is Charles. He's asking, John, how is it not a federal crime to expose children to pornographic material? I think it is How do we prosecute school boards for committing these felonies?
Well, you know, first of all, it's not necessarily a federal crime. It's just a crime, period, and should be tried by the state. I know when I was a kid, I've often heard of the idea or the problem or the illegality of corrupting the morals of a minor. That was a crime. And we don't need to have it on the books as a crime. You know, one of the things we're going to be doing here is I'm going to start with New York. By the way, we did get a few people who have sent in for books to be sent to their sheriffs under our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. I'm not sure how that happened because we kind of flipped that over to give that responsibility directly to the people to be able to print out letters and put it inside of the book and then deliver it to their sheriff in person or by mail. Or however they want to accomplish that. But of course, since we did get it, and I'll have to check online to see why that is, you know, we will send those books out. And I'll check with, I'm not sure what state that was in, but in any event, I know the individual ordered 3 books for 3 sheriffs, of course, 1 for his own sheriff and 2 others for 2 other counties, which is good. And we've had some people, or quite a few people actually in the past that have done something like that. We've had an individual who've ordered maybe a dozen of books and to be sent to sheriffs, which was good. We do have 3 states where sheriffs are in, you know, they all have received the book, and New York is one of those states. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm bringing this up, particularly under this question, is because the sheriffs could enforce some of the laws that would not have been sought, that may not seem to be enforced anymore. For instance, all that destruction that took place in the Summer of Love, you know, was that a couple of years back. And, you know, the police are held back, and how do they get away with this? You know, police are controlled politically by, depending on what kind of a police officer it is, could be the city police, but therefore could be a mayor, could be a board that controls them. State police are controlled by governors, and so on and so forth. But when it comes down to the sheriff is controlled by the people. He's not politically controlled. Although they're trying to turn that around and make that happen, that they want to put them under control, under political control. And we have to resist that and prevent that from happening. I know here in New York we have 7 counties where the sheriff's under political control, 5 counties in the boroughs of five counties of New York, which is the 5 boroughs of New York, Westchester County, and the other one, I believe, is Nassau County. So that's 7 counties that are under the control, where sheriffs are under the control of political individuals. And I know in Connecticut they have 8 counties, and all 8 counties have been brought under the control of a political individual. So that creates a big problem. And again, the reason I bring this up is let's take this this parade that they have, this transgender
Pride parade.
Pride parade, yes, I'm sorry. Pride parade. Well, transgender is another problem. But you have something like that, and I've seen the demoralization down in New York City when they've had these kind of parades, but never as bad as we've seen the ones that they recently have had, where these people have been in the streets naked. And they weren't arrested. I don't understand that, because when you think about it, you know, you could be arrested for indecent exposure. And, you know, and of course, a lot of that has happened in the past, you know, where people are arrested for that. But here you got a city where a whole bunch of people are marching down, nobody done anything. And how did they get by that? How did that happen? Well, apparently the police were held back, and the sheriff doesn't have the backbone to do anything about it. And it's not necessarily the sheriff's fault. The sheriff lacks a certain amount of knowledge. He has a basic idea of his job and who he is and what powers he's got, but he lacks a lot of knowledge of what powers he really does have. He's forgotten, you know, who he is in a sense. So that has become a major problem for us. The other thing is, you know, we've had some conversations with a particular sheriff in upstate New York here on a situation, going after the IRS, going after Social Security, going after a couple of banks. And the sheriff, after some conversation, the conversation went for a good half hour or longer, and I don't know, I wasn't at the conversation, I know Gerard was at that conversation, and it was also with another individual. They weren't sure whether he was the undersheriff or just, he was a lieutenant, so, and I think I recall, because I've met that lieutenant before, and that, and I don't know if the same sheriff, but I did meet the sheriff in that county before. But anyway, with some conversation, they agreed 100% with everything we were talking about. They did get a hold of the book. They did have the book, Government by Consent. They brought it, we got this book, and you know, it was our book. We sent it to them. And so they had apparently been reading it and starting to get empowered as far as the knowledge is concerned. But the other problem they have is backup, you know, and that's where it came down. You guys are right. We can and should go out and do something about it, but we can't because we don't have backup. I'm only one sheriff in one county. And I have, you know, I don't have any other support behind me. You know, he'd be totally destroyed, and he's right. He would be totally destroyed. So, of course, we can forgive this guy to some degree for this. But we have to correct the problem. And only the people can correct the problem. It's up to you to correct this problem because we have to educate our sheriffs. So I'm going to kind of add to this campaign for sheriffs. And I'm going to go through and see what states we have delivered to all of the sheriffs in that town. Now, within that county. I'm sorry, within that state. So like I said, I got three states that I do know we have given books to every single sheriff, New York being one of them. So what I'm going to do, matter of fact, it's the very next thing on my list to do. I'm working on some papers right now, a couple of days, and after that I'm going to work on this paper. I'm going to work on a letter. And once I put the letter together, I'll read it to you on a Monday night program so you understand what we're doing and what we're saying to the sheriff. But this is going to, you know, I'm not sure exactly the words I'm going to speak. I'm thinking a little bit about it, but again, I have to sit down and write it. But the key thing about this whole thing with sending them a letter is we're going to send this letter to all. Oh, one of the other things the sheriff mentioned, which I had thought about before, but, you know, and I don't remember, we may have made contact with this guy, but it was years ago, quite a few years back, where we wanted to go talk to the Sheriff's Association within the state. And I believe that's totally run by sheriffs. In other words, it's not an outside entity that's running. All the sheriffs come together. And I think every year or every so often they choose a new sheriff to kind of put everything together and be the representative of the Sheriff's Association. And I do believe that's done in every single state. I'm not sure, but we have to find that out. But we do know it's done here in New York. And before I became an author, before we came to the, actually as far as we've come today with our website, we were sending emails out to the sheriffs, and I think I'm pretty sure we were being identified as crazies, you know, because the sheriff would get our letters and we'd try to give them some information, some empowerment, talking to them, and we're sending this out, not through emails, through faxes, I'm sorry, we're sending faxes out. And so we were sending a fax every week or so to sheriffs. And each week we'd send a fax out with a page of information trying to empower the sheriffs. And I don't know where that went to, but it didn't seem to really amount to much, as at least what we could see. I do know it was after that that we spoke to some sheriffs here in New York, and we were trying to get to become a speaker to bring an understanding of government by consent and the power and the authority of the people to all the sheriffs of all the counties here in New York. And it didn't go anywhere. But I do understand that the sheriff was running that was not necessarily one that would be on board with us as far as natural law is concerned and how we understand and see the Constitution. They were more focused in a codified fashion in really on statutory processes instead of common law. But anyway, now, you know, as I said, they do change the leadership of who runs that association, who makes the details and who puts out the information for the association meetings, and I think they have a newsletter that goes out, and they also have a conference once a year, and they have speakers that come to that conference, and I'd like to, you know, get to be one of those speakers that go to that conference, and so that's really where I'm heading with this. And we need to do this in every state, but it's up to you. It's up to the people to do this. It's up to the people to really make contact with their sheriffs, to maybe get a campaign going to make sure that every sheriff in their state has a copy of the book, Government by Consent. And that's the primer that has to happen before we can really approach the sheriff. We have to give them some knowledge. Knowledge that they don't have, knowledge that empowers them, knowledge that can give them the backbone as long as they can get other sheriffs to work with them, knowledge that will give them that ability to stand up against this out-of-control government no matter what level it might be on. So anyway, that's the thing that has to happen. Now, the letter I want to send out, and New York, like I said, is going to be the first one we're going to do it in, and in that letter, it's basically going to, you know, I'm going to introduce myself individually as a person, as the author of numerous books, and also as one of the co-founders of National Liberty Alliance, and talk to them a little bit. You know, I want to try to keep it to one page. I don't want to get too wordy on it. Because they have the book, it should spark something in the minds of all these sheriffs. And what we want to offer them, and you know, talk a little bit about some powers and authorities that would empower them that they don't even realize that they have. But the key thing here is to really get them focus in on what we're doing and focus in on that book. But what we're really trying to get to is to invite them and their deputies to come to National Liberty Alliance and freely take the course that we're coming to an end of this course right now. I think we're going to have two more sessions, and we're going to come to the end of it, which is court access in the common law, which really would enlighten the sheriffs completely on our heritage, on the foundation of America, who we are as a people, what liberty really is, and what their job is to defend that liberty and to protect that liberty. That's what they're there for. They are the constitutional sheriffs. They are the constitutional law enforcer. Matter of fact, the sheriffs are the only law enforcer, period. There is no other law enforcer. And they need to understand that and realize, and I think a lot of them, of course, they're living in the same world we're living in. They live where we live, and they're seeing all the craziness going around. So I think they're kind of primed, if we speak to them in the right way, to kind of open their eyes. So anyway, we'd like to get them out here to give them free course on really the foundation of America, government by consent, how the court system works, and so on. So it's a campaign. I think it's really important. And if you really want to get liberty protected within your state, I think people really need to be thinking about this. One of the ways you need to do this, I think, those people who are starting committees of safety within their counties, and even if you don't know, if you're not in a committee of safety and you don't know what's going on, but you want to start a committee of safety or get involved in one, you go to your state and see all the committees of safety that are there, and take note of all the individuals that are running those committees of safety. You can get their first name and their phone number. Matter of fact, let me show you where that could be done. It's on our website here. Find your district leader is one place. There's a couple of ways to get to this page. But you come down to your state. I'll take New York because that's the state I'm in. All right. And once you open up New York, we can see we've got 700 members here in New York. We have a total of 62 counties. All 62 counties have been constituted. And all 62 counties, all sheriffs, have received the book, Government by Consent. So before we would do this, we would contact, a good idea would be to contact all of the individuals that are running committees of safety in that town, in your state. And then by giving them a call and discussing the idea of coming together to get, you know, this constitutional program, this sheriff's constitutional program going. So our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. So we would want to contact them and ask them if they want to participate with the funding of that project and what would be involved to do it. Find out if they've already sent books to their counties. to county sheriffs. Again, in New York, we're done here with that. But then, you know, someone's got to take really control of their state to make sure that every sheriff gets a book. I can't do it. I was trying to do it, and that's why I was sending the books out from here and trying to keep track of all the different counties that have, you know, all the different sheriffs that have the books, whatever counties they may be in. And then trying to make sure that every other sheriff gets the book. But that's probably the first thing anybody wants to get involved is get on the phones and start talking to the people who are working in committees of safety within their state and talk to them about this campaign for constitutional sheriffs and how we got to get the books in their hands. And once that's done, okay, I'm thinking of another thing here is maybe going through a training course for people who are interested. And if people contact me on this, we'll talk about this a little bit. If you're interested in this kind of an idea, you can send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And, you know, basically a training course on how we would go about, you know, giving a presentation, for instance, to sheriffs. And also to other places, presentation in the way of the sheriffs, we would focus it in from the standpoint of, the powers of the county sheriff. And it would talk, of course, about all the things that the National Liberty Alliance is doing and lay a lot of information out and so on and so forth. But also another thing is I'm starting to take some interviews now and so I have a sort of a plan on some things, how I want to kind of, you know, bring people up to an understanding of what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. So whenever I have an interview, I always spend about 15 or 20 minutes just describing National Liberty Alliance and what it was doing and what we've accomplished and what our goals are. But I think maybe we need to train people to be able to do that. So, because I'm not going to be able to travel to 50 states and go and give a presentation to the Association of Sheriffs within your states. I could do that here in New York. I would do it here in Connecticut. Connecticut first, we're fighting the battle in Connecticut, which is one of our next projects. We just haven't had the time to do it yet. But we have to go and fight back to get our sheriffs back in places where they've been taken away. Like I said, 7 counties in New York, 8 counties in Connecticut. And there are numerous other places where they don't have sheriffs. And thank God it's not a lot, but there are places that are talking about trying to get rid of the sheriffs. There are places that have taken a lot of the jobs away from sheriffs. Okay, as a matter of fact, I know here in New York, and I'm not sure in every state, but I imagine it is the case in every state. You know, the job of going before the grand jury has always been the sheriff's job and the coroner's job. Never a prosecutor. Never, ever, ever. That's a political animal, and you can't have that, you know. So, in any event, that's the problem we do have. We have to get that back into the hands of the sheriff. But sheriffs don't remember that. Sheriffs don't know that. The people don't seem to know that. And to be honest with you, the bar doesn't even know. The bar attorneys, they've been totally polluted in their thinking anyway on how the justice system works. So, you know, we have to bring that knowledge back, and we have to get that going back and exercising that. And that's when we'll really start to be more free because, you know, just not anyone can go and bring, you know, any of these prosecutors. There are a lot of political things that go on. I see it all day long where people are getting their indictments from a grand jury. They snooker them and dazzle them and lie to them and get their ham sandwich every day, all day long. And that kind of stuff has got to stop. And the only way it's going to stop is if the sheriff takes control of that. The sheriff must handle that because he's not a political animal. And he has no skin in the game for whatever is being brought before the grand jury. He's totally independent and has no knowledge of what's coming down. A prosecutor comes and says to the sheriff, we want to prosecute someone. They bring all of the evidence before it, and the sheriff looks at it, and he could say, well, you know, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I'm not going to bring this before the grand jury. Or he may see it and say, well, let me do some more investigation here and let me see what I can do. And so he would do a little exploring and make a decision on whether he's going to bring it to the grand jury or not. But it would be honest. It wouldn't be political. It wouldn't be controlled by a political animal. We wouldn't have so many political prisoners, because I'm telling you, we have a whole lot of political prisoners. People don't understand that or realize that. And the other thing, you know, the federal government, they never had the power to indict, to go before the grand jury. It wasn't until 1970. So I got to figure out New York State. I got to check some of the states. Maybe other people will explore this and let me know what they find on their state as far as when did they take this away from the sheriffs. When did they create a statute that gave the power and the authority unlawfully, you know, this legislation is not lawful. When did this legislation come in your state to be able to get the power of prosecuting the prosecutor going before the grand jury to ask for an indictment? When did that happen? And I haven't looked that up in New York. I haven't looked that up yet, but that's a definite battle that I want to go after. You can't legislate the power to go before the people in that way, in that fashion. This whole system is set up, the common law system is set up in such a way that it prevents the politicalization of these powers. And it's a major problem. So anyway, we need to deal with these problems. That's kind of my next big focus, is on sheriffs as far as, you know, getting them back into power in places where they're not, giving them their full power and backbone. Backbone is not only knowledge, but also the ability to have backup. So that these are key things that need to be done. So again, getting back to the people. Okay, people need to work real hard on their states to make sure that their sheriffs have these books. One of the things I want to do soon is maybe turn one of these Monday night meetings into a special meeting, focusing in on committees of safety and trying to get all the leadership of the committees of safety to come together and talk about national problems and think of different ideas on how we'll deal with them. Hopefully we can find maybe one or two or more solutions that, you know, people can decide what they want to do and do it. But we have to work these problems out, and empowering our sheriffs is one of the main things we have to do. It's one of the first things we teach the committees of safety to do once they get to a certain point. From the very beginning, as soon as they start to set their paperwork up, it's working through a process, you know, leading them to that day when they're going to really focus in on the sheriff and get them to really come in to work with them within the counties to empower the people and bring things back to order. But going back to the school boards here, that's when we can deal with the school boards. The committees of safety can deal with the school boards or the town boards or any board. I forget which board was in view here. Terry, what was the board they were thinking of? Was it the school board or town board on that paper?
Yeah, it was school board.
School board.
How do we prosecute school boards for committing these felonies?
Well, first of all, if you have a sheriff with knowledge and a backbone, again, you have a sheriff that has knowledge and backup. Let's call it that way. Okay, they have knowledge and they got backup. Now they can get bold. Now they're a pit bull, and that's it. We're bold. We're coming out. We're going to get you. We don't care, because you can't do nothing to us. We're applying the law. So we can get them to get to that attitude, okay? Then if we expound upon them how they are corrupting the morals of a minor, and clearly these town boards are corrupting the morals of a minor, it's just people have to just get together and see what they're teaching our children and tell them to cease and desist, and they won't. And then you talk to the sheriff about doing something about it. So that's one possible way. But the key thing really is to remove these people, because you've got to get rid of the cancer. You can't cut a piece of the cancer out. You can't treat parts of it without bringing it to a healing. You know, you got to get rid of it. You got to cut out the cancer. And the only way you're going to cut out the cancer is to get rid of the school board. You go before, and we do have a plan. We've spoken about this in numerous occasions, but I'll kind of try to breeze through it quickly. You know, you have to set up a situation, and this is how you grow your committee of safety, by the way. Once the committee of safety gets going, we're teaching people, you know, first of all, there's a contact. These people that are contacts, the committee of safety leaders here, that's their committee of correspondence. This is our connection to that committee. So they are part of the Committee of Correspondence. And they don't need a lot of people in that particular committee. It'd be good at least two or three, but they don't need a lot of people. But basically, they will communicate with other committees of safety within their states, the next-door counties, the sister counties, or getting all the counties together and communicating a problem within the state, let's say, that we have to come together collectively to work on and to solve. And that's what the committees of correspondence would do. And they would do that on a national level, too. We would have that meeting here at Monday nights here. We take up one Monday night a month, maybe, to discuss issues on a national level and how we think we might be able to go about solving the problem. And again, remember, committees of safety are all, free and independent, so they get to decide what they want to do and how they want to do it. But hopefully we can get people to work together in many different areas and agree upon, yeah, let's all do it that way, or two or three different things. But the thing is, we have to deal with the problems. But anyway, the second most important committee to be created as soon as the committees of safety is going, and you maybe have 15, 20 people, is you want to get that education committee, primed right away. And of course, there's a process of working with the sheriff that you want to get primed right away. So again, in the handbook, if you read through the handbook lays this out. I don't think it lays out so much of this idea with the Committee of Safety for the Education and what we're going to speak about now. So I'm either going to add to the book, I'm probably going to add to the book, and I'll probably write a paper on it, post it underneath the Starter Committee of Safety, where we have all the other information for people who are starting and building committees of safety. But here's the plan. If you have 20 people, let's say, and you got a committee of safety, a subcommittee for education, an education subcommittee, and you say, okay, one of the things they do is they want to chart out all the schools within their county, okay, whatever level. You can come to the grammar school, high school, and colleges. So you want to chart them all out. And of course, people want to, the people who are on the committees of safety are probably going to want to start out in the schools that are in their area. And of course, that makes sense. But once they chart them all out and they put them on a paper and they say, okay, this is how many we have. Some of us live in this particular area here, and we're going to start with maybe the grammar school. Okay, which I think we should, because they're really polluting our youngest children and they're getting them very young. We've got to take them back. But you go to the say, okay, let's do this particular school district, this board, okay? So you find out when their next board meeting is happening, okay? You start to do some investigation to see some of the problems, particularly with that particular school, that district and that school district. You want to put together, and we'll put some ideas together, maybe some small postcards that you might send out. And people can write whatever they want on them. The Committee of Safety have to get together and approve some kind of a small message going out to the people. But come out with maybe a postcard, maybe the size of half a sheet of paper. Take a piece of paper, fold it in half. Maybe that's the size of the postcard. And it gives you plenty of space to write enough information, but not too much, because you do want the people to read it. And when you write too much, people have been trained not to read too much, and that's a problem. It's a problem created a lot by technology, particularly the phones. Phones are a major problem in this nation. It's one of the biggest destroyers of children. We give these things in the hands of children. We have no idea the damage that is being done to our children through those phones. You think it's damage is being done by the schools? That's nowhere near what's being done on the phones. And I know firsthand, because I've been watching, particularly my nephew, and as he's been growing up, my children didn't have those phones growing up. I mean, they were given phones, but they weren't that young, but then they were not into the texting and all that stuff. So, and they still aren't, just a little bit, but they still aren't. But nevertheless, okay, we need to get to the school district, back to the school district idea. So we then create this postcard. You go down, in the county building, there's an office called Real Property, and they record all kinds of information on all the properties within the county. Okay, every county has a real property office, and you can go in there and they break things down, okay, in many different ways. So you can go in there and take a look and say, well, okay, we want to We want to get addresses to all the people that live within this particular school district. And they can pump that right out. They can put it onto CDs where you come and you can run labels off yourself. They'll run labels off for you. I know when I last time I did it where they ran labels off, there was a penny a piece. So if there was a, you know, 500 people, it was $5. So it wasn't expensive. And they run the labels off. Or, you know, again, you have it put onto a disk or a thumb drive, and you go into Word with your word processor. You can run labels off there, or you can run them right off onto the postcard itself, which is what I would do. And so you print out all of the names and addresses of all of the people within that school district. And then, of course, you have the name and address of the Committee of Safety. Each Committee of Safety should get a post office box so that they can be communicated to through the mail and an email. But in any event, you know, and just like a regular, you know, envelope on one side of the postcard would be, you know, the Committee of Safety and then all the people, the addresses for all the people within that district. And on the message side, basically what we'd be telling them is that, hey, you know, we have a lot of problems with the school. We're doing some investigation, and we're finding that they're teaching about woke and doing this and teaching that, or they, you know, whatever it is that some of the problems are. And you say, well, we're going to have a special meeting here down with the Committee of Safety, and you give them the location on a certain day, which would be a regular committee day, you know, because you should have a meeting once a month. So all things should start off and with business normally, the way it would go. We lay that out in the handbooks on how it should happen, process of business, you know, old business, new business, and, you know, and people reporting. And then you get into the business of the day. And the business of the day, now you've invited all these people, okay, and maybe you've sent out 500 mailings, and maybe 50 people responded, maybe 100 people responded, who knows. And basically, you're telling them in this post office, in the postcard, that we're having a meeting, and this meeting is going to be to discuss the problems of the school board. And then on a certain date, the school board is going to be meeting, and we're going down there with enforcement to make them follow the law and obey the people of this community. And so hopefully, you know, I think this will draw a lot of people. Matter of fact, after this event, and after you have the meeting with the school, and you get something accomplished, you're just going to grow your Committee of Safety by 50 more people, maybe, or whatever it is. And again, you got to realize every school district you're going to, okay, you're going to pull in more members and you're going to get more correction. And this thing will grow quicker and you'll be able to do it faster because you'll have more people to work it. And so in any way, the key thing is this, is going down to the town board. And there is a process we're laying out with what's called a quo warranto. And a lot of people may know what that is, but some people maybe are new here don't know what a quo warranto is, which is a demand for the credentials. Okay? So a quo warranto should be written out. And once you serve a quo warranto onto an individual in office, and all these people are in office and they've all taken the oath, okay? So once you file this paper and you serve this paper onto them, okay, they have 10 days to respond. And if they don't respond within 10 days, they give up their office. And very few people will respond, so you're going to really just vacate the whole system. And in the process of vacating the whole system, anyone can seize control of that office, walk up, take command, say, I'm going to fill this office until our next election, and that's it, you're in. And so that's one of the ways to do it. And the way we enforce this, or can be enforced, again, this is why it's very important immediately to start thinking about bringing the sheriff on board, okay? And that's why you want to prime the sheriff. You want to get the sheriff educated. You want to get that sheriff on board. He sees you as a constituent, you know, and we teach people, you know, when the committees of safety, you know, you have to get together your paperwork. And some of the things you need to do, okay, is you have to have a charter and you have to have resolutions. We have all of that laid out again, right here under Committee of Safety, handbooks, videos, and tools. And right here is, Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. Here's one right here. When you click on that, you download it. You can get this in a handbook form if you want. You can go up to Amazon and get that. We have links on our website, and you click on our books, and you can get that. And they're pretty cheap. We made it as cheap as we could. But anyway, here is the handbook that you know, trains us. And now, having got all of these details on this education thing, I'm going to add that into the book soon, and I'll definitely get it up as a paper. The other thing is, you got your resolution. So we've laid out a resolution ready to go. You come together, the Committee of Safety comes together. Once you have maybe, a dozen people together, you can start working on the charter. Remember, the charter can be updated at any time, and this is resolutions, but the charter should be the first. Let me get to the charter. Okay, where is that charter? Here it is. Okay, this is the charter. Okay, now it's only about 5 pages, okay, and it's a basic charter. And each Committee of Safety, you know, they come together when you have about a dozen people together, you create your charter, and you add or take away from whatever you want. Here, we strongly suggest to stick with the framework and then add. You know, we didn't get into individual personal things in here. Each county's got to get into their own problems and figure things out and, you know, make certain statements of who they are, what they're doing. But this charter is extremely important because this is what's going to buy the sheriff into what you're doing. The other thing is your resolutions. You want to do resolutions. And again, resolutions could be added to. And in the beginning, you'll probably be updating resolutions the first year every couple of months because you'll be thinking of new things that need to be added because you're going to be more and more educated of the problems of the county, what you're doing, and so on and so forth. So your resolutions will be done too. And then, of course, we talk to people about getting a seal because that makes it official. I believe we do have a seal in here. Let's see. Pretty sure we have a seal. There it is. Committee of Safety seal. I gave you an example of what I did here for my county, Dutchess County, in its Committee of Safety. I put 1776 AD because that is the foundation of all our law. And my county is Dutchess County and my state is New York. So it's a simple seal. But seals are impressive. People think a lot more of paperwork when you file a piece of paper and you put a signature on, you put that seal on it, it's coming with authority. And we are an authority. We're the people. We the people ordained and established the Constitution. So we are the authority. We're the lawmakers. We put this whole thing together, ultimately, of course, and the Declaration of Independence was the beginning of that process. So anyway, you got the seal, okay? You got the charter, okay? You got the resolution, okay? Now, if people are following the program, in the handbook, then it will probably take about 3 months to get to that point when you're ready to meet the sheriff. Because while you're putting all this together, you want to make first contact with the sheriff. You want to give him a call and introduce yourself on the phone. Say, hey, look, we're a group of people here. We're forming a committee of safety, and we'd like to come and talk to you for a while. We only want 5 or 10 minutes of your time. And when you go there, you present them with information. You know, there are things you can download, for instance, on this page here. We have the Sheriff's Handbook, I believe, in here somewhere. Yeah, Sheriff's Common Law Handbook. So you might want to present them with that. You might want to go out and buy the Sheriff's Common Law Handbook. And again, you can get that on Amazon. Let me see. If we go to welcome page here, you come down to books by John Durash. It's the open in, where is that? A new tab here? Well, I'll just open it up here. Okay, if you come to this page, you can go directly to Amazon to get these books. Okay, so we have the County Sheriff's Common Law Handbook. It's more impressive if you give them a handbook. Let me see, singularly. This book is going for $6.99. Okay, a piece. Now, you know, at some point in time, if we can order 50, 100,000, 500,000 books at a time, we can be selling these books for like 60 cents a piece, 50 cents a piece. Because if you can order in that kind of a quantity, you can sell them a lot cheaper. You know, we have a lot, and at some point we will be doing that when we can get that kind of funding to do. But until now, then, you know, this is what has to be sold. I think we're making $1 a book on this that goes to National Liberty Alliance. But everything else is printing and shipping and, you know, for them to put it together. We're not making much money on this at all. But, you know, 100 people is $100, so $100 is is nice to be able to have, to be able to support what we're doing here. Okay, so anyway, so you could do that, or you don't have to necessarily do that. You can download the handbook right here. This is the handbook. It's a PDF, so it's 8.5 by 11. Okay, let me see. Should I get to the end here? Let me get back up to the top. And this book, too, I'm going to be updating. You know, I do a lot of writing, and from time to time, of course, you know, you have more knowledge, and you figure you got some errors here and there, and you got to go back and change it. And I know I got errors in various places throughout all of my books, you know, every author does. And it's easy for me to change that in Amazon, because I could do that very quickly or easily, but it does take time. I just have to find the time to go through my books and find out all the different areas that I might want to make some corrections in. But it's not a lot. You know, it's nothing major that I can think of. So anyway, this is a handbook that you can give to your sheriff. You can also offer the sheriff at that point in time, say, look, you know, this is your first meeting now. Remember, you only want to be there 5 minutes. You don't want to be long at all. And so you want to give him something. If he hasn't got the government by consent book, you want to give him the government by consent book. Definitely want to get that. You'll want to print this out and have it bound. You can make it look nice and take it down to Staples and have it binded and have them print it out where they'll print on both sides and with a good stock paper and put a binding on it. And so you have a book to give it to them that's nice. So you could do it that way. And this is in color, I think. So if they can do it in color. The first page maybe is the only thing you need to do in color. But anyway, you got that. You got your charter. You got all the other things you're working on. But you want to get this handbook to them. You want to get a copy of government by consent to them. And basically, you know, you're here dealing with problems. Your charter and your resolutions are going to explain to him exactly who you are and what you're doing. And he's going to see the authority that it's coming by. And this is where our founding fathers did it. This is how they took control of themselves and their government through committees of safety. And that's what we need to do. This is how you have government by consent. It's the only way. There is no other way to have government by consent but through a committee of safety. Absolutely none. I challenge anyone to find another way and let me know about it, because I'm totally unaware of it, and I've been researching this for a long time, and I can assure you there is no other way. You cannot take your government back without having... You have to work together with the people in your county on the grassroots level, and you have to do it properly. And anyway, this is what we're doing. We're bringing it to the sheriff. So now, the sheriff, you just had your first contact with your sheriff. You were there for 5 minutes. You gave him a copy of the resolution. You gave him a copy of your charter. You gave him a book. You gave him the sheriff's handbook. And you say, look, we'd like to talk with you after you review all this stuff. What do you say in a month or two, you come down to our meetings and let's talk some more? Okay, so you're giving this guy time to get a little educated. And you're prepping him and preparing him. He's seeing constituents. And, you know, maybe he's seeing 12 people at that time. When he comes to the meeting, maybe he sees 30 people or 20 people, whatever it is. Okay, and that's going to grow. But now he understands what you're doing. And he sees the legality about it. He sees the power. He sees the authority. He sees the common law-ish, kind of speak, about it. And he's been educated a little bit. Now, one of the things, you once that sheriff is on board with you, maybe it's another month or two before you go out to the first board, school board, okay? And remember, you have a political committee that's going to the town boards, village boards, city boards, okay? So you have the political committee, you have the judicial committee, you have the educational committee, and they all have a job, okay? They're all working to bring back control of their courts, of the political process, of their schools, school districts, all back under the will of the people. And that's what the Committee of Safety does. That's what they're doing. They're talking about these things. They're planning, and they're executing their powers of government by consent and bringing these people to conform to the will of the people on the grassroots level. And if we can get every county in America doing that, we got 100% control. But we don't need every county in America to get to really that kind of control. We can get to 2/3 of the counties with committees of safety. We're there. And, of course, we'll continue to get them all. But anyway, let's get back to the sheriff here now. Now you go into the school board. Now, you've got a process. You've got to be working on all these things as you're going. And if you've got a half a dozen people or half a dozen people, and let's say by the time you get to your charter, you've got 20 people or at least a dozen people, okay, you're at a point where you're working all these things out. So 3 months down the line, like I said, it could be the time when you're pulling your sheriff in, depending on how fast you're working. Could take be 4 months, could be 5 months. It depends on the people doing it, working to get this accomplished. You're bringing the sheriff in. Maybe on the fourth month, you've got the plan ready to go for your school, first school district, to deal, bring them back under the control of the will of the people. And so you execute the plan I'd mentioned earlier about to going down to real property, getting postcards out and so on, and having your first meeting. And so on the fourth month, you're planning that. Maybe on the fifth month, you have your first meeting with the first school board, all the people that are living in that district, the school board. And then maybe it's the following month when they're going to be having their board meeting. So at that meeting, you're going to discuss all the problems. You're going to come to agreements. You're going to write them all down. Of course, you have a secretary. You have records of all this stuff. Best thing to do is to record it, literally record it, and then put it into writing, at a later time. That would be the secretary's job to do. And then bring it back at the following meeting, which would be looked at, and everybody would agree, yeah, this is it. Okay, so now you're looking to have you're looking to have that first meeting with all the people. You've recorded all the problems and situations. You choose a speaker for the process, okay? And everybody's going to head down to that particular school board on that particular day, and you're going to have in your back pocket what's called a quo warranto, okay? And if there's eight school board members or whatever, maybe you make 10 just in case, 10 copies. And as I said, the paper you'd be filing on them is 3 pages long. And it's a demand for their oath, their bond, and their financials. And they have 10 days to respond. And by law, you can remove them from office in 10 days. Now you got to go back and you've got to go down to the court system and file it. Which we'll get into all these details. Like I said, I'm going to write this up. I have to put this in all these details down. So anyway, you're at the school board. One speaker gets up, goes to the list of problems, explains what they need to do, and demand that their obedience. And what say you, board? Now, if the board rejects and ignores what you're saying, that's where the sheriff comes in. He or one of his deputies needs to come to that meeting and needs to understand you're bringing them there to serve. So you have these papers and you pass them on to the sheriff to be served, and the sheriff will come up and serve each person, do a certificate of service, and you got that certificate of service. They've been all served. They've been all fully informed. And now you take control of that board by removing that board, because they're not going to respond in 10 days. Okay? And if they do, then they're going to become obedient individuals, because the will of the people is what's paramount in these districts. They have to start obeying us, not doing what they want to do, not doing what somebody else and some political animal somewhere else, which really leads up to the powers that be, so to speak, what they want to do. No, we want them to do what we want to do. And you'd be in business. You're going to remove them from office if they don't. So that's how you take control of boards. That's how you take control of a school board, a town board, any kind of a board you want. And there's other things to be done. There's going up eventually meeting with the county legislators and bringing them back under the will of the people, finding out what's going on. And, that's why you need the committee working to discover the problems and potential and get together some potential solutions and bring it to the full board at some point when the report is ready for discussion. They should all get a copy of all the information and know that the next meeting we're going to be talking about this, and then they're going to be adding to that and coming up with better ideas and so on. And then at some point, you're going to go up and talk to the county legislators, and you're going to deal with them. You're going to do the same thing with the state legislators. That's going to take, working with the other county committees of safety, and that's why it's so important to grow committees of safety around you. You don't want to be alone. You need a backbone. You need backup, okay? And each sheriff needs backup. And you got the sheriffs and you got the people working together in every county, working to bring these people back under the will of the people. Okay? And then you get to the national level. And that's where we would have meetings here to talk about national problems and how we would approach them. And I'll tell you, one of the most, I got so many in my mind, but one I've been thinking about a lot lately, it's just frustrating to me, is you know, things we need for our congressmen or congresswomen to do. And if we're all collectively working within a state to push our Congress, you know, those who are representing us in Congress, and we're all telling them the same thing, listing out the things that we want them to do, you know, we can then, you know, have the ability for them, because then you've got them all on board working to do something for proper legislation, you know. One thing that really is frustrating to me is calling, you know, whether you call a government agency, you call a doctor's office, and you call a business, you call a phone company, I mean, all of them, you get on the phone, unless, you know, they push you over to a website. You know, go there and fill out the paperwork there or whatever they want you to do. Or they tell you to get an app and they want to talk to you on an app, but they don't want to talk to you on the phone. And it gets very frustrating, especially when you have a problem and you want to deal with it and get it over with. You know, not spending your time working out paperwork and trying to do things and downloading apps and communicating and how many apps you're going to put on your phone, you know. In any event, we need to require anybody that's doing business and is taking our money, they need to have someone answer that phone. And we don't want to sit on the phone for 6 hours waiting for someone to answer. I mean, I never waited 6 hours, but I have waited an hour and a half. That's the longest. And I've waited a long time sometimes, and then the phone call drops and so on. But it's just one problem, and it's a frustrating problem. So we have to figure out what our priorities are, what our problems are. We have to discuss them, have some conversation about that, come up with ideas, and then execute our solutions. And that's what a committee of safety does. And that's how we solve all these problems. And we can fire everyone. And if a congressman, we're also working through the process on the political side to take back the committeeman process, because that's what Committee of Safety is. They're the committeemen. They're the real committeemen. The committeemen that are out there right now are statutory committeemen. They're politically controlled. They got bosses controlling all of them. And they only deal with certain situations. And everything is to grow the New World Order. It has nothing to do with anything for we the people. And once a lot of those committeemen realize what's going on here with the committees of safety in your county, okay, they're going to come on board with you, except for those who are making the money, you know, the crooked people, the ones that are controlling the whole thing. But that whole system will fall apart. And if we're doing this in every county and those systems fall apart, just guess what? We just got rid of the parties, didn't we? The Republican Party, the Democrat Party, and any other party. We got rid of all of them. And where are we at? We're back with the people. But you see, the stronger and stronger a committee of safety grows within that county, within your county, okay, the more realization the people who are elected in all those election districts within your county realize those are the people I need to go to, because those are the people that are going to get me onto the ballot. And then we have to require them to come and take the course. They have to become educated in the Constitution. We'll support you for any kind of an office you're running for. But you go out to National Liberty Alliance and you sign up for that course. The course they need to sign up is Court Access in the Common Law, because that gives everything. This is a really in-depth course. It's the most in-depth course we've written, and I've given it live. So it's the most powerful course we have. And when they come out of that course, they'll understand what their job is. They'll know what the Constitution is. They'll know who the authority is, and they know that they are the servants and we are the masters, and they need to be obedient to us. And if they don't be obedient to us, then we just remove them from office. Very simple process. We even have the paperwork up there right now, and I'm doing it's called a recall. You can run your papers and recall anyone you want, your congressman. And you see, that's how they get the power over these people, by the way, in these statutory committeeman processes. Okay, but they have all these party bosses. They know these people who get into office, they got to come to the committeemen to get into office. They can't get onto the ballot without doing that. There are certain offices that can be done, but you have to walk a number of papers and get a number of signatures to put a person onto the ballot. That's how it works. And they don't have the manpower and the force to do that. They can't do it themselves, although I do know some people who maybe needed only 1,500, for instance, signatures, and they went out and got it themselves. It's a big job to get 1,500 signatures. You know, each committeeman only needs to go out and get maybe a dozen or 20 signatures. That's it. So it doesn't take that long to do. So we can all do that. And collectively, we can collect hundreds of thousands, depending on the size of our committee and who we're working it for, how we've worked together with other counties to decide what congressman we're going to bring in power, and so on. So we can walk it, get all the signatures, and put them on the ballot. That's control. They know they have to come to us to get onto the ballot. But no matter who puts them on the ballot, whether it's the statutory committee man at this point or us, you know, at this point, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Once they're in office, if they're disobedient, what do we do? First order of business, send them a quo warranto. They have 10 days to respond. They have to leave their office. Now, they may not, they'll ignore that, and I'm not too sure how easily that'll be enforced, especially on this side of devolution. On the other side, I think it'll be a lot easier. But the key thing is this, is we could do a recall. See, on a person that's elected, recall is the process. So we would still serve them the quo warranto. We'd still serve them the cease and desist from their office. And we then would walk the papers to get a recall. You need a certain number of signatures, and there's a process for that. And I think we have all that written up in our books. But in any event, you get those signatures, you recall them, and you have a special election. The Board of Election has to set that process up on the recall and on a re-election of a new individual. So you really want to find someone to replace them with, too. So anyway, that's how you have government by consent. That's the power and the authority of the committee. And that's just the beginning. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more here. There's controlling the courts and all of the political systems. Bringing us back to a republic and having people to stop calling us a democracy. And we have to do that through knowledge, and that's why they have to get educated. All right, anyway, I know I took a long, long time, and really I was just talking about the board, but I took that opportunity to relay this whole thing. And I will be putting this in writing and step by step that people can work with in order to execute this process. All right. Is there any other questions there?
Oh, yeah. There's about 3-4 more. The way I use the words law and legal for my own personal reference is if Congress passes a bill that is unconstitutional, I refer to that bill as legal. And if Congress passes a bill that is constitutional, I refer to that bill as lawful. That's Jim Barr. I guess there was no question in there. My mistake.
Well, I'd like to respond to that.
Okay.
And I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I did do a little research on this. I, too, thought the same thing because I was taught that. And my mistake for being taught something and not checking it out. And there are a lot of people on the Internet that teach that, especially those who are teaching things you might be able to do in court and all that other stuff. But they'll use that kind of terminology. But the truth of the matter is a fraud. It has no legality at all. And the word legal and the word lawful are synonymous. If you go into Black's Law Dictionary, you'll find out they are synonymous. They mean the exact same thing. It's just a different way that you might use it in speech when something that is legal or something that is lawful. They're interchangeable, but they're the same thing, so there is no difference. No, you have what's called a de facto law, and you have the law. You know, they had in 1934, in 1934, Rules Enabling Act, which came into power and authority in 1938, where the rules of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure was then put into place by the Supreme Court, and every state followed the same thing. So all courts, all of the states have done the same thing, where they claim to have abrogated the common law by rule. Imagine that. You can't abrogate the common law by rule. Can't set the Constitution aside by some judge making a rule and applying that rule. But that's what they've done. And how I view that is I call that the de facto civil law. Okay, and you're going to see in the paperwork when next week when we look at some of responses on the paper we've been looking at in a case for the IRS, and I'm expressed this idea in that paper, they are under civil law. They are exercising civil law. People are going to those courts. People are going to jail, have to pay some restitution to someone for something, or whatever the case may be, but it's all under civil law, okay? Well, when I go into court, I'm not going in under civil law. I'm going under law, and that is the language you got to really lay out and express in your paperwork. And I think you'll see in the next Saturday's session here, which is going to be part 11B, I think it is. Okay, and on court cases. You know, I have some written up and you'll be able to see that. But that's the difference. So I refer to that. It is something that's believed to be true, but it's not. That's what de facto means. It's thought to be something of power, something of authority, something of truth, but it's not. So it's a de facto, okay? But we're under the law of the land, which is in fact. It's de jure. So those are the terms that should be used to separate the difference. So we recognize that, but then we make the claim. And all civil law courts are nisi prius courts. And so that's the point that needs to be made out. There's a civil law court. It's a de facto civil law court, which is a nisi prius court. And I don't comply. I'm opening a court of record, which proceeds according to the common law under the power and the authority of the United States Constitution and protected under the Seventh Amendment, period. And that's the kind of language you might use to state your case of jurisdiction and your argument. And, you know, these people, they ignore a lot of things. They just walk all over you. But I think at some point when they realize, as the papers go back and forth, especially with the case we've got going now, okay, those papers go back and forth, there's no doubt in my mind this law-breaking judge, who don't even obey his own laws or his own rules. Forget about the true laws and the true rules. But I think from reading papers, and I'm going to express this point when we do this in the study next Saturday. I think this judge is shook up. I think this judge realizes that he's got a problem. And he's stressed out. I could see it in his papers, and he keeps threatening us with sanctions. He keeps threatening us with all kinds of things, but particularly sanctions. And so he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. But he put himself there, and we'll see how this turns out. I think we got some powerful papers going through on that, and I feel pretty confident that we're going to win this whole thing. And we got two lawsuits now going. We got a lawsuit against numerous individuals relating to the IRS and banks and the various other agencies and even the clerk, the county clerk. But now we have one against all of the bar members of the court. We did a collateral attack upon the court, which we spoke about last week or two, and we spoke about also on our Saturday, sessions for court access in the common law. All right, what's the next? You said you had another one, Terry?
Yes. Shall the people fill out business registration certificate and application of registration for facetious name?
I don't understand the question. Try it again.
Shall the people fill out business registration certificates and application of registration for application of registration of facetious name?
Yeah, I don't know. There's not enough information. Are they talking about
okay.
Corporation? They're trying to do a DBA? Is there some other process that I don't know what process they're trying to go through?
Okay, the last two are by the same person, and they're a little long. I'll read the first one. If it's going somewhere, let me know, or I can stop. When I hear John say that when he collects damages in court, he demands compensation in the form of silver. Have the courts honored that demand? And then there's more of it after that.
Well, before you go on over it, they can't not honor it. But you have to win the case first. The problem is they keep throwing you out of court, and that's been the chess game we've been playing for 15 years, maybe. We've been in courts for quite some time now, and it's a chess game. I've been to the school of hard knocks. That is the school of hard knocks. And then you get kicked out and say, okay, what do I do next? How do I defeat that problem next time? And then you go through the whole process again, and then, you take to the next step, and again, the same thing over and over and over again until you finally get to the end game. We are at the end game. Yeah, they have no choice but to honor it, because that's our wherefore clause. That's what we're deciding that we want, and it's reasonable, okay? It's not $1 million. You know, each $1,000 in Morgan Silver dollars is, last time I looked, would be about $26,000 or $27,000 for each thousand, okay? Because each one is worth about $26 to $27. And it's probably more than that now. It was a while since I looked at that. That fluctuates. So if you end up going after someone and you've got 10 violations, so you get $10,000 so $10,000, 10 times 27, for instance, is 270, times, what is it, 100 or whatever that is, but it's probably about $270,000, if my math is right. But it's reasonable. And it's real. And why would we want phony money? Why do we want monopoly money? Why do we want debt money? No, we want real money. And that's what I call it when I write the paper, real money, and define it as Morgan Silver dollars, face value. That's what I define. So anyway, they can't
okay.
You win the case, that's what you get. Go ahead.
Can the form of payment for wages in silver from an employee be argued and adjudicated in a court of law from an employee that asserts the constitutionality of exclusive gold or silver as stated in Article 1, Section 10 to receive that as a form of wages? And then he's got another.
Before we go to the next part of that, I don't know why they would bother doing that if you think it out, because... You know, all you're saying to them is take my money and go get silver and give me silver.
Well, yeah, and you know, you sign a contract, and
yeah,
the contract's in daily dollars.
Buy you silver.
Yeah.
So why give an employer that's also stuck between a rock and a hard place on different levels. You're stuck on a rock and a hard place. Between a rock and a hard place, you have to have your Social Security number. You can't get a bank account without your Social Security number. So you have to get that. You know, you have to have a driver's license. You're stuck between so many things that you don't want to really do, but, hey, I'm in the game. I have to do what I got to do, and we got to change things meanwhile. You know, you have to have a birth certificate, all that stuff. But here you got an employer. It's kind of in the same kind of a situation. He's in the same boat, but he's got different problems. Why give him a hard time? He might decide you're more problems than you're worth, and he'll find a way to fire you, maybe.
Fire him, yeah.
So I wouldn't bother with that. Look, if you get X amount of dollars, or whatever, he could have turned that into silver. You could do the same thing. He'll turn it into silver coins. The best to do is the silver coins. It's called junk silver. Put junk silver in the... in your search bar, and you'll find all kinds of places selling it for all kinds of different prices. They're very close. You buy a face $100 face bag, or you can buy one coin, or you can buy a $1,000 face bag, or a $500 face bag of half dollars, silver dollars, quarters, dimes, whatever that you want. And that's the best way to go, because it's cheaper, number one. It's only got 90% silver, but it is a U.S. coin, it's guaranteed face value in its true form. Okay, so...
Okay. On the subject of silver and real constitutional money, there seems to be an awful lot of conjecture surrounding the currency of the near future, and that it may entail a digital format and financial advisors and experts such as Dr. Kirk Elliott and Ron Paul, back in the day, would heavily promote the acquisition of gold and silver. Now silver be the more affordable of the two. How can gold and silver be redeemed and spent in everyday situations, such as a grocery store purchases and a yard sale? And would the value of the face of the coin be honored, or would the current weight price be honored, $1 versus $27 an ounce?
Well, it would be the same way it was for when I was a kid. When I was a kid, we had silver coins. They had face value. It did fluctuate with inflation, and and it was adjusted as it went up or as it went down. That's why, you know, even if you go to the bank and get silver, get coins, even if they're not silver, it doesn't matter. I get halves because halves have some silver and some metal inside that has some value. But the key thing is this: it's got face value. Any U.S. coin is guaranteed face value. So when you have a silver dollar, let's say a silver dollar, you have not a silver dollar. Let's say you have a silver coin, a half dollar coin, okay, and its face value is a half a dollar. All right. Well, that half a dollar value, maybe 20 years ago, bought X amount of dollars worth of food, where today it's percentage of that. You know, because you have inflation. It sounds a little complex, but you have inflation in there. But the point is this. When I was a kid, for instance, you'd go to the store, let's say the candy store or the grocery store or whatever, delicatessen, and you buy a candy bar. Now, I was just in the store today looking at the candy bars on the rack, and they were like $2.59 for a Milky Way or something. I paid a nickel for that. Now, along the line, as time went on, that nickel, it became a dime, and it became a quarter, it became a dollar, and it became $2, and it became $2.50 now. You see, the inflation. But if that goes back, and if they backed off the price and dropped it down, okay, well, it's still the same face value. You're getting the face value, but with the inflation run in it. But when inflation is deflated, when it's gone, okay, then that's going to have full power. So the point is a box of halves, which is $500. That's what a box of halves costs if you go to the bank. And it's got some metals in it, but it's guaranteed by the U.S. government. It's not the Federal Reserve note. This is a coin backed by the United States government in law. Okay? So when everything resets, I'm going to spend a nickel. I'm going to spend that half dollar to buy something for a nickel, okay, and get 45 cents in coin value back. The point is, it follows the inflation up or down, back or forth, no matter how it goes. Now, with the debt dollar, that's just worth nothing. We're not going to go to a digital form. If we go to a digital form, it'll be for an extremely short time, months, if even that long, if we even get there. We're going to go back to silver and gold on the other side of devolution. Whenever that happens, that's when we're going to go to it. So, the exchange is going to be an education to try to figure things out, because everything has a different value. For instance, we ask people here, the National Liberty Alliance, to support us with $5 a month or more. Okay, well, $5 a month or more in a corrected, going back to gold and silver, that might be 20 cents. So you're giving us 20 cents a month instead of $5 a month. But the power, the spending power, that 20%, 20 cents, is equal to and better than that $5. That's what you have to realize. You know, I remember going to buy a pizza pie, okay? And we'd order a pie as $1.10. $1.10 for a large pizza pie, okay? What do you pay for a pizza pie today? You know, it could be as much as 18 bucks or 16 bucks. You know, it fluctuates. But that's the difference in the relationship. Same thing with a candy bar, okay? Or anything else you buy, you know, milk, bread, sugar, meat, you know, hugely, hugely, hugely different. So your money will have more power. It'll be much stronger and have more clout. And, you go back, 100 years, 50 years, 80 years, 70 years, people who were working jobs and making minimum amount of money still were able to survive because the money had more clout, more power. You can get more. You know, in New York City, you know, if you go into a lot of apartments like in the Bronx and a lot of old apartment buildings, okay, which a lot of them are still standing, and you go inside into the hallways, they're beautiful. I mean, they get these beautiful receptional areas, a lot of these buildings, not all of them, but a lot of them, marble floors, beautiful trim, high ceilings, you know, and you come in, and the apartments also have all these nice trim and everything throughout. That was all expensive to do. Not really. Well, it was expensive in the one sense, but it was affordable in the other sense. I mean, we can't afford to build like that anymore, because the amount for a home that was built like that, or so, let's take a home for instance, and you build a home at that quality, which today a home might be, you know, $400,000 or $500,000, which is ridiculous, but it's what it is, and a lot more than that, $700,000. Well, that home in today's market, to build at the quality of the way these apartment buildings were built, goodness, that might be $5 million, $3 million. It would be millions of dollars. Many times the cost of what the home would be. It would be very luxury level. So now again, not all apartment buildings throughout the Bronx, but most of them are. I know along my block and places where I hung out and friends I went to, they all beautiful going in, beautiful you know, reception areas as you go in, seating areas sometimes, and a table, marble stuff, beautiful stuff throughout the building. But they can't afford. You can't afford to build like that anymore. But if money goes back to real money, yeah, you can. So, all right, next.
That's about it, John. That's the end of them.
Person here, then move along. Robert from Texas, you got the mic. Go right ahead. You should have the mic. I don't know why it didn't click. Let me try it again. Try it one more time. I don't know why that's not going. Let's try that. Go ahead. You got the mic.
Okay. Thanks for this opportunity. We got some optimistic thing here in Texas. Our county voted to pursue censorship on the Speaker of the House. His county has already done it, and a bunch of other counties are. So we may shortly be without this Speaker of the House. One of the things he did, I don't know if I mentioned last time, was for the parliamentarian of a Republican Texas House, the Speaker hired a White House attorney from the Obama administration. And so that's how a lot of our conservative legislation got the hatchet job with an Obama White House attorney. There's one other thing I'd like to add about somebody we ought to add to the team, and that's kind of like the clergy that knows the Constitution. I think we can go that whole deal in the First Amendment with the right to petition. And that is a serious right. That's a right that just as of today, I understand that you know, our founders would have used that on the school board. And it doesn't really take any organization. It just needs somebody that can write a petition and some people to present it.
Yeah, but they're bent on whatever. They're bent on. In other words, they got their marching orders, or they're true believers, and they're controlled to some degree, and they're going to ignore it. I know Robert Schultz has gone up before the United States Supreme Court on two occasions, and he's going on a third right now. Robert Schultz.
I know a Dan Schultz, and I know a Robert West. I don't know a Robert Schultz. Who is he?
I'm sorry. I thought most of the people here know. But Robert Schultz is the founder of We the People. It's a nationwide organization. He's been going through the courts for about 40 years, 30 years, and he's been winning a lot of good battles. But now up against the establishment, he's been going in. He's been before the United States Supreme Court on three occasions for redress of grievances, and the United States Supreme Court said he had no standing. Okay, now anybody that's got a beating heart, that's got a pulse, he got standing with the people. Okay, now Robert Schultz has really been kind of on a technical end, mostly dealing with the court system under the civil authorities. But just recently he's finally had an epiphany and realized the common law power. And so he's starting to really put that into his game plan. And it will be going up also with a redress of grievances and with something really. We're going in ultimately with a writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. And we've been battling that, pushing that through since, let me see, January, February, March. I think April was when we first initiated it. And we keep getting blocked by a clerk there. So, but in any event, the point is, redress of grievances, you're not going to get them to do anything even by using that process. The only process you're going to be able to do is the process of power and authority, remove them from their seats if they don't obey. And that's why we're setting up the program we have. And that's the proper process, too. We shouldn't have to go and beg them for anything. We should go there and tell them, this is, well, we're the people. This is our school. Let's just talk about a school board district. But this is true with anything. It doesn't matter. Okay? But on the school board district, here we are. Look at, we're the people. We're here in force. We're the people that are involved. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority to participate. We're the majority that's participating. We're here right now. We're telling you for the last time, be obedient, and this is what we want you to do. And if you fail to do it, we're removing you from office. End the subject. What say you? That's the attitude. You have to go in, you know, kind and, you know, with, you know, you have to be polite. But you have to go in with confidence and boldness and lay it out the way it is. And then come in with the power of the law. That's why you come in with the sheriff or one of his deputies, because you're going to serve papers and make it, make it real for them. Now, coming in with your situation that you're talking about, you can spend your time battling them and try to move different ways, but I would spend my time solving the problem altogether and building committees of safety. Because we're a republic. We're not a democracy. We have no part of democracy. A republic cannot survive with political parties. Political parties are destructive. What are they there to discuss? What do we care what they, you know, every watch what's going on in Congress right now, and you can see the debates. You've got the Democrats upholding ridiculous things. I mean, what kind of logic? They have no common sense. They can't defend what they're saying and what they're doing. Okay, they speak in circles, and you know, but the thing is you've got this argument going back and forth all the time, right and left, left. We didn't hire them for that purpose. We hired them to go legislate within the powers and authorities we gave them in Article 1, Section 8. End the subject. You got 18 powers. Exercise them. Don't come outside of it. Don't come talking about our rights. Who gave you the power or the authority to discuss our rights? As a matter of fact, there is a law. There is a law. You can have anybody who uses their office in order to springboard an attack upon the Constitution, a movement to try to get rid of your right of free speech, your right of redress of grievance. You try to get rid of that, that's a crime. You go to jail. That's a crime. You can go and you can talk about those things all you want, okay? But if you have power and authority and you're sitting in a seat in an elected position and you're executing that authority in order to destroy our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, that's jail time for you, okay? Any organization that teaches that, you can teach it, you could talk about it, and you can't be arrested for it. You could talk about communism, socialism, Marxism. You can lift it up as all as you want. But the moment you create an organization in order to empower that movement and start to put out literature, and this is a law, this is in codes, okay? Then you can be arrested for that, for subversion.
Okay. That's exactly why I said to bring the clergy in, because we can attack all this from a religious perspective.
Forget about them. Listen, they don't care. Look at, they hate Christ. They hate. If you're talking about Christianity, they hate Christ. They want to get rid of Christianity. They want to demoralize us and our children. They want to destroy the family. But let me make my point. Just another minute. The point is this. Okay, you're fighting a battle that you're not going to win, when you can take your energies and fight the battle and win. But, you know, let the people are the power. We don't need a clergyman to go up and do it. We do need them to work with us. They should become parts of committees of safety. People from their congregation should come. Fine. I mean, they shouldn't be teaching and preaching their denominational thinking. But the thing is to lift up, the Lord is one thing, of course. But the thing is let's come together as the people. Let's solve the problem. Let's execute our authorities. We come in and we tell them what we want. You do it the right way. You organize the right way. You have the right papers. You have the right service. And it doesn't matter. I talked about dealing with a town board and school boards. We're talking this same thing works in with everything in government. You take control that way. You tell them what you want. You could demand it or you remove them.
The whole thing is, the first sentence of U.S. law again establishes the limits beyond which God's law can't go. So if we have a humanity-loving preacher like this Jaron Jackson, J-A-R-R-I-N Jackson, he's, and you put an at sign in front of it, and you'll find some of his Rumble stuff. And there's a guy named Dave Jose, and he is working with Kerry Lake right now. And all the lawsuits that they've been through and all the ones that Trump has been through, he's able to get them established by having Kerry Lake be a person and suing.
But you do realize none of that's going to work. You do know that, right?
Well, I don't know that. But I knew that.
I can tell you right now because this whole thing. Let me tell you why. If you look back, we've been going into the courts. And I'm talking about the president, okay? Not just us, all right? And everything that Trump has done and his organization has done and all of the white hats behind him doing and all of the people that are in office like Lake and others that are doing what they're doing that for the sole purpose to prove to the people that the courts are corrupt. We're not going anywhere because there's only one solution to this whole thing. That's the military. There's no way to get around that. You know, I look at six or eight years ago, the only solution was the Second Amendment. That's the only solution. I knew that a long time ago, and I prepared for the exercising of my Second Amendment rights, not with insanity, but with when the time comes and there's nothing else you could do. They're coming out for me. That's it. It's done. Okay. Now you exercise the Second Amendment. It hasn't gotten to that point, but that was the only solution until Trump came. In my mind, that was the only solution until Trump came. Once Trump came onto the scene, as soon as I heard he was running for office, I said, that's the guy, because I knew Trump, not personally, of course. I come from New York City, so we know him down in New York City. And I knew that he is the only guy that could do this. And he proves that when he talks. He talks about his connections. He talks about his knowledge. Listen to what he's saying right now. I don't know if you're hearing. He comes out with a message like every day and puts that, you know. And he's telling you what he's going to do. He's going to annihilate the deep state. Everything he did up to this point was really to get to wake the people up. He couldn't fix this problem when he was in office. He couldn't get the military to come out and do anything because it would divide the people. We'd be fighting in the streets. There'd be civil war. He couldn't do it. So this whole plan, okay, trust the plan. This whole plan was to get us to a point where the people just can't take it no more. And it may be. It may be they will move us to digital currency, okay, which then they'll start for a short period of time, which then they'll start exercising. Well, this guy's not doing the right thing. He's not obedient. We'll just shut him down. So push a button, he's broke. And they find out you feeding him and helping him, they push the button on you too. Because that's what socialism is all about, total control of all the people. And they have the technology to do it. So that may be allowed to go through for a short period of time. That may happen. It's not going to stay here because at some point there's only one solution. Nobody can solve this problem but the military. It's a military solution.
You might tune in tomorrow to the Smith County Commissioner's Court. This petition thing may be exercised.
Where is this at? Tune in where?
It's a SmithCounty.com Commissioner's Court.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again. Smith County?
Smith County.
You're going to spell that out. I spell that out.
Smith.
S-M-I-T-H?
Smith County. Yeah, like the name Smith.
S-M-I-T-H dot county. CounTY.com.
Yeah, here. Let me. Google took down my calendar. Let me pull this up.
We're running short on time. We have about seven people in the queue.
I've had less than a minute here. So I hate the parties as much as you do. I'm just looking at the advantages of what the party system has. Their population density is just vast. you know, and, you know, there's just, it would be easy just to get all of your NLA members to try to become precinct chairs and then recruit the other precinct chair.
That becomes confusing, you know, and if people can even articulate what that real plan is, it'd get lost very quickly. I don't want to discourage anyone from doing anything. What's going on and what you're doing out there and what all the people are doing out there to work to do what they're trying to get done, that needs to get done. I agree with the – I would tell people not to put their time there, that I think there are better places to put it, but it needs to get done for one reason, only for one reason and one reason only, to show that it fails because, again, we have a government that has been captured. And it was disease control. They will not obey the will of the people. They just will not do it. They cannot succumb to the people. They cannot give in because once they give in, they know they are going to end at the end of a short rope. They know it. That's it. We're talking about the powers on a higher level know this. The powers on the lower level think that they don't even realize that their days are numbered.
Okay. So watch for the removal of the Speaker of the House of the ninth largest economy on earth that should be happening pretty soon. I had our U.S. representative Friday afternoon in a group of about 100. He called me out three different times talking about the separation of powers, which is what they're violating here in Smith County Court. So,
all right, well, look, we'll keep an eye for it. You can come back next week and tell us what happens, and hopefully something can get accomplished. And, you know, there will be some victories, no doubt about that, here or there, but far in between. And, you know, we have a plan, and that's the plan we're exercising. And, again, I don't want to discourage people from doing whatever it is they're doing. You know, it's helpful one way or the other anyway, even if I believe it's not going to work.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same team. You know, there's so many advantages of coalescing on this thing, and I'm sorry I just can't make you understand that because, everybody I know hates parties.
I was a committee man. I was elected three times as a committee man. I got nowhere. Okay. I know the system, but look, I don't want to discourage you. You may have something going with a group of people that have been able to seize powers. There was a county, north of me that seized power of their county, and they did a lot of good work up there. And they separated themselves from the party bosses, but that's very difficult to do. But they were limited. Okay, it was a small county. Okay. They didn't worry too much about it. They didn't have too much influence on the state level. So, they did what they did. Eventually, they fell away anyway. You know, the leader of that passed away, and the whole thing fell apart. I don't know where they're at right now. But anyway, look, I do have more people in the queue, and I got to leave at 11 o'clock, so I want to give some time.
All I can say is I'm recruiting Protestants, mainly preachers, that really know the Bible. They really understand the platform. They're holding those party bosses to their oath, and that's how we're getting rid of, our Speaker of the House, and how we got rid of the.
That could be good, but with that, Rob, I got to move on. If you want to talk some more next week, I got to go. There's seven other people here, and we only got like 15.
I understand.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Deborah, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you. This is a personal question about Georgia versus me, Deborah Hall. I had code inspector to come, and he filed charges against me for junk cars, junk vehicles, and junk. And I was trying to see what kind of rights could I use because he had to come down and probably drive half of a mile to even see my property. And right before you get to my property, it is a dilapidated house full of junk and stuff. And to me, it is an abuse of power because, the reason I believe he's doing this is because the sheriff bought 40 acres behind me and they built two homes. And he told me that I need to move it because the sheriff had people coming up and down the driveway. And he never said anything about zoning. So I'm trying to see what are my rights, write an affidavit. What can I do, when I go to court to defend myself?
Well, here's the problem. I can tell you what you can do and how to potentially win it, but then it becomes I become like a lawyer to you in the sense that when you do that, then next thing's going to happen. I got to tell you what the next thing to do. You need to be able to learn to articulate your position and your point. You need to know how to be firm and come with authority into the court and all these things. And that's all that is to be learned. Not that you can't learn it, but you can. And that's why that's why I decided to do this course, court access in the common law. So if you took that course, you'd have all of the knowledge necessary in order to exercise the things you need to do. But the bottom line is you go into the court and you challenge jurisdiction. That's what you have to do. They don't have it. But then you got to defend that. And that's where the education comes in. You have to write a paper. The paper's got to get there before you. It's got to precede you. Then you got to walk into the court and you got to tell them you're here by special appearance and you're here to test the authority and the jurisdiction of the court. And you don't have jurisdiction. I filed the paper with you. Did you get my paper, Judge? And the judge is going to tell you no, because they don't want to know that they even got the paper. A lot of times they return your papers. You know, they just the clerk gets it and sends it back to you. That's a crime. So if that's what happened, I'd come in with that paper, which has the stamp on it that they had received it, plus I have my signature card because I when I sent it to them, they got a signature on it, and so it was certified. And I would pick that paper up, and I have a couple copies of that in my back pocket, but I'd pick that paper up, and I'd say to the judge, I filed this with the court, okay, and you didn't get it because your clerk sent it back to me. That's a felony punishable by 2 years in jail. And I'm not here to press any charges here. But I'm here to inform you that's what took place. Meanwhile, with that, if the bailiff would come up, here's the papers that I filed. If you'd like to have 5 or 10 minutes to read it, I'll sit down and wait, okay? But the bottom line is you don't have jurisdiction. I'm challenging jurisdiction, and this has to cease and desist. Now, you have to be able to defend that. You know, I wrote a paper on positions and points that you can make when you're in court for this. But basically, it's just a challenge of jurisdiction. You can let the paper speak for itself. The judge will turn to you and do one of two things. he'll say, I got jurisdiction, let's move on. That's one thing. Or he may say, well, we're gonna put this aside. We'll give you another court date. We'll come back in a month to discuss this. But my answer to both of those things is, I'm not coming back to this court. Once I leave the court, I'm filing a complaint, I'm filing a papers, I'm moving this into federal court for cause. You're denying me my due process, you're hijacking me into jurisdictions unknown, and I'm going to sue the court directly. Now, you could try to sue the court with a collateral attack, which is what we're teaching right now. We just taught that this week, this Saturday, and there's a second part of it coming up next Saturday. But I wouldn't do a collateral attack on a village court, a town court, or a city court. Because all those courts are totally, on total statutory. They're all code enforcement courts. Okay, when you get up into the higher courts, they're statutory also, so they're kind of code enforcement, but they're looked at as being courts of record. The lower courts are not. You could still open a court of record in a lower court. Now, I think a lot of what I'm saying to you, you're really not understanding unless you have some kind of an understanding of what I'm talking about, you know, what a court of record is. What it means to come in as a special appearance, the challenge of jurisdiction. You know, I don't know what understanding you have of those things. Most people have no clue what I'm talking about, but that's the problem. You know, these things need to be taught in grammar school. By the time someone comes out of eighth grade and moves into the high school level, they should be able to defend themselves in a court of law. But they don't know because they're not taught that. None of us are taught. I was ignorant to this. I knew none of this stuff until I started my research, because I was being assaulted by the IRS and had to deal with these people. That was the beginning of my School of Hard Knocks. That was the beginning of my research and putting all these things together that we built a website around. So all I can tell you is this. There is a process. You're not going to get a lawyer to help you to defeat it that way. You're going to lose. No matter what you do, you're going to lose. The only thing you really have to give you comfort on this thing is to do the best you can to fight and get educated, and then go back and kick their butt. That's what you could do. Because you can come back a year from now. They could take your home. They could take your car. They can take everything. They can take your income. They can take everything away from you. Okay? Not in this case. They're not going to do that. But I'm just saying these people are out of control. They could do that.
Right.
Okay? But the thing is this. Because you don't know how to defend yourself, you don't understand how the court system works, you don't understand what your true powers and authorities are, you don't understand, that you're the lawmaker. We, the people, are the lawmaker. We ordained and established the Constitution. We decide who goes to court or not through indictments. It's the people who decide. We decide innocent and guilt. We decide facts and law. We decide the restitution, what the punishment would be with an iron restitution. They took most of that away from us, but that's the power we have, and we've lost it. We need to get it back. Okay? So, my point here is this. You go into court, you fight the best you can, you salvage everything the best you can, you get yourself an education, and maybe a year from now you go down and you put these people in the poorhouse, every single one of them. Keep good notes, record everything, keep a log, go through everything, because they can't enforce codes against you. If that's your property, you can do whatever you want with it. Of course, you want to try.
And the county, I'm not even in the city. Like I say, you have to come half a mile down my drive to half a mile to even see my property because I'm nowhere near the county road.
Well, that's fine. That's even more the point, too. You're not even a sore thumb in the community. So that's that. You know, the point is this. These people are abusive. They are abusive. They're control freaks. You know, you give people a little power and it goes to their heads. We need to bring them back down a couple of notches to let them know, hey, wait a second, I'm the master, you're the servant. You got to stop this nonsense. And if you don't stop this nonsense, you know, we're going to court. But now, when you go to court, you need to know how to win. Okay? And again.
All right. Well, should I write an affidavit before I go?
Well, what would you could write an affidavit. What would you want to say in the affidavit? What's your defense?
My defense is, like I said, it's a dilapidated home. It's not even 15 feet from the road that he can see full of junk and stuff before he comes down my driveway.
Okay, so you can make that point. They're going to walk all over you anyway. They're going to try to enforce. What are they trying to enforce? To come in and remove these things from your property or force you to? What are they trying to do?
Well, see, like he told me, the sheriff bought property behind me. So he literally bought the driveway, but it's my easement. But he's behind me. So he's saying that I need to move, which they're not junk, they vehicles, I have tax and stuff on them, but that I need to move them because the sheriff got people coming up and down the drive.
Oh, look, I understand that, and again, the only way you can go into court, you can tell them what you think and what you believe and what you're desiring, what your will is, and they're going to do whatever they want. They're probably going to do whatever they can do against you to assault you. Look, I live in a town. I have a beautiful car, an extra car laying outside. Not laying outside, but it's outside. It's clean. It's got tires. It's a nice car, okay, but it doesn't have plates on it. And the town's been after me for over a year and a half to remove that car, you know? Well, what are you going to pay for storage somewhere for me? What are you going to do here, okay? I've ignored them. They're not going to do nothing to me. And it's been a year and a half. But, you know, I've had some things in town, and I don't think they just want to mess with me, to be honest with you. But most people, they would. They'd come and tow that car, maybe. I don't know what they would do. I can see them coming and trying to tow the car. But the thing is, you have to learn to defend yourself. So my suggestion is to go to court, put your side of the story is, do the best you can. You're probably going to lose, so don't get too high to think that you're going to win. You're probably going to lose. And all the whatever damages you get, the denial of your due process is key. Okay, when you go into that court, it's hard because you don't understand to be able to defend this. I don't think, but your position is, judge, you're denying me a due process. You are hijacking me into jurisdictions unknown. I have no clue what the jurisdiction of this court is. I know you have subject matter jurisdiction, but you certainly don't have personam jurisdiction. And that is your first injury right there. denial of due process.
Hey, John, Deborah, she says she's in Georgia. Can you tell me what county you're in?
I'm in Butts County, and I also looked up the COS member and called that number, but whoever they are, the number is not valid anymore.
Yeah, people come in and they become inactive. What was the name of the county again?
It's Butts County.
B-U-T. Oh, Butts. Okay, Butts. Very good.
Yes,
all right,
Georgia.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, that's the best I can tell you. Get into the course, get an education, and...
Well, I'm in the course. I bought the course. I also got the book.
Okay.
Government back of sense. I'm waiting on the law handbook to come. So I've been studying laws. I just want to know, could I use my Bill of Rights amendment or whatever when I go into the court?
Well, in the course, 2 weeks ago, we covered a challenge of jurisdiction and code enforcement. So that's where you want to go. Chapter 10. When did you come into the course? Did you just come into the course recently?
Yeah, I just came in last week.
Okay, so you go back and you watch the session on, let me take a quick look to be sure. I think it's chapter 10. Okay, these are the chapters. Let's see, chapter 10, Appeals Enforcement Extraordinary Writs. Chapter 11. We just started this. Chapter 11. We did traffic court argument and jurisdictional challenge, and it works for any kind of code enforcement by town, village, and even cities.
Okay. What is that under?
This is under Education Starts Here. Come to Court Access in the Common Law, that highlights, and you come over to Court Access Recorded Videos, okay, because we record each one of these sessions, and that would be the last one we put in. That was just this past week. Okay, so this is the one here, Chapter 11A, Case Examples. You click on that.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance.
And you're going to pick up one, and it's going to cover your problem right here.
July 27th.
So you're partly there now. Okay?
Okay.
And the other thing is this. You know, after you watch this, okay, get out your MP3 player or even put it onto your computer as an MP3. Right here, you can click on the MP3, which is the court, the same thing without the video, okay? And that, you know, you play it in the background. Even if you're doing other things, you'll pick up little things here or there. You know, I listen to a lot of audio if I'm in the pool or in the backyard getting sun, or if I'm driving or doing mindless. I put these recordings on, you know, I to the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. I've listened to 5,000 Year Leap and a lot of things. And so you could do the same thing. You're close, but, you know, you may not have, look at you. You may have the ability, you know. If you
I believe I do, because I've taken pictures of the dilapidated house and the junk and stuff that is clearly visible from the county road. And then I'm going to get my plaque that shows I'm half of a mile from the county road, and it's you have to come down a private drive, and you know, I'm doing my paperwork. I'm getting my stuff together, and then also I had a total hip replacement in October. I have that paperwork. I've been reading since I joined, and I got law books, so I am learning.
When's your court hearing?
It is August the 17th at 9 a.m. And I also put it on the
Hold on.
I put it on the website.
Deborah, hold on a minute. Why don't you call up the court tomorrow and tell them, look, I have a conflict with the 17th. I'd like to reschedule a court date. They very rarely deny it, especially those lower levels. They don't care. They'll say, okay, fine. We'll send you a letter with a new date. It'll be 30 days away from there. Okay. That'll give you... You know, 17 days and 30 days, it'll give you 40, 50 days to prepare. And you go through chapter 11, okay, like I told you here. Go through chapter 11 and go through it a few times and make your notes and you can write your papers and you'll be ready to do what you got to do.
I am. I'm going to start reading tomorrow.
You can come and ask some questions throughout the month, you know. You can come on every Monday and ask a question about this or that when you're stuck somewhere. And if you're in the course, we have an open forum at the end of every session, and you can pick up any issue from within the course, from the first session.
Okay, because I also signed up for page of 125, for the, the study of the course and stuff.
All right, well, I got to move to the next caller. Maybe we can get one or two.
All right, thank you again.
Thank you. Okay, let's try another caller here or two. We're kind of running out of time. Carl, looks like. Oh, no, Carrie. Is that your name, Carrie? What state you're from?
Hello?
Yep.
Hello.
First name and state.
Thomas Jenkins. I go by TJ, and I'm from Indiana.
Okay, TJ from Indiana. Go right ahead.
Brother, I love what you're doing. It's a God thing. Anyways, I got into a situation concerning, I got a notice from the court for a default, a mortgage.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a pre-summons. It's not an actual summons, I don't think, at this point.
You can stretch
anyways,
that. You can stretch
I got that.
The first
I'm sorry?
The first one from the court for, what is it, the foreclosure?
First one from the court, the mortgage company sent a notice back in June 20th.
Okay, when do you have to go to court?
Well, let me tell you where I'm going. They extended it. The other side is asking for enlargement of time because
good.
They can't respond to the 100 documents of conditional acceptance.
Okay, hold on. Stop. Hold on. I got you. That's what you want to do is you want to put as much time as you can on this thing. I strongly suggest you take the course, okay, and look
okay.
at more, these mortgages, okay, it's unlawful, okay. They cannot foreclose on a mortgage for so many reasons. First of all, there really is no contract. The only thing you had is an agreement. When the bank gave you the loan, the original loan, okay, they were just there to place the loan, and they made a point, a half a point, whatever they made on the loan. The bank got their money, and that's up front, and they're done, okay? So they kind of just put the loan together. The money comes from the Fed window. So they went to the Fed window, got the money. It's all digital, okay? And then you get it. Now, there's what's called the SESQ accounts, which sounds kind of wacky when you really look into this.
No, I understand. I understand all that. I took Brad Pittman's course.
You don't have to get into that conversation, just as long as you understand how this thing is working, because you have to have confidence in your mind that you got the law on your side and you got justice on your side, and you got to go in with the right kind of attitude. You don't bring those arguments up to them because they have no idea what you're talking about, and they'll think you're wacky, and they're not going to listen to you, and you're not going to... You have to speak like a lawyer, and you have to use as much of their stuff as possible. Whatever is in harmony with the common law, you use. If they got rules that's in harmony with the common law, you use. You use statutes, you use them against them. They don't apply to me and you, they apply to them. Once you understand that, when you understand you come in and the whole thing is a sham, it's a fraud. Now, we wrote a paper. There is a paper. Let me see if I can find this page. There is a paper we wrote. Let me see if I can find this. It's a memorandum of law, nonjudicial foreclosures, okay? Now, you go into a paper on a nonjudicial foreclosure, and you can use all this language. You can use this memorandum. You can attach it to your papers. Now, a couple of things. You're drowning out the court when you bring in too much information. Sometimes you have to bring in a lot of information. But generally speaking, keep it simple. I always focus in on a couple of things. Number one, first thing you look to see what the jurisdiction of the court is, what they're applying against you and how they're applying it, and you have to discover and lay out the facts that, A, you don't have jurisdiction, maybe. I mean, it could be a number of things, okay? Maybe they don't have subject matter jurisdiction. Maybe it's the wrong venue. Maybe they don't have a personam jurisdiction. So once you figure that out and you figure, well, okay, I am in a court that they think they have something, and it's a court of justice. In other words, it's got a court of, it's referred to as a court of record. So I got to believe it's either a state or a county court, not a town court. If it's a town court, they don't have jurisdiction, so you can shut that down immediately with jurisdictional town. go anywhere else. If you have to pull this into the federal court for cause, the only thing you discover, the only thing you have to argue is your denial of due process particularly, and maybe other violations. You have to figure that out, and then you bring it into federal court. And if they've assaulted your right of due process, then you win. You just have to prove it and lay it out. And, you know, we have papers to show how to do that. And then at the bottom is your wherefore clause. And the wherefore clause is an order to cease and desist for that court to shut down, and they're done. That's number one. Now, nonjudicial foreclosures is the position. This is a fraud, okay? And we lay out the fraud in this paper and what the violations are and what it violates, okay? The unalienable right protected by the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, okay? They violate all of this stuff. Then you go through the ruse that they went through, okay? And this ruse, ultimately, what they did is I'm looking in here to see if I can find it. Securitization. They securitized mortgage. This was against the law, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of things, and if you lay it out, if you use the proper language, okay, most people won't even know what you're talking about. The judge should. Now, it depends on his level, and if he's a state judge, he probably does. County judge, often they may too, because a lot of the county judges, they have two hats. They go back and forth, and they're also state judges. So, you know, they kind of have an understanding. What you want to do is signal to the judge your knowledge and the problem and the fraud that's taken place. And you don't want to bring in the fringe information. You know, I'm a man on the land. Don't bring any of that, because they're not going to take you serious anymore. They're not even going to read your papers, okay? So you got to come in. You got to be a worry to these people. You got to go in with confidence, speaking in ways. Yeah. This knowledge is far above the average lawyer, okay? They don't even comprehend this stuff, all right?
No, they don't.
And so it's above them. You don't care about them. The more you can be above them, the better it is, because they don't know how to defend themselves. They can't respond to these things. They don't even know what to say. Okay.
And they haven't responded for 60 days. No. I understand everything you're talking about, but I'm wondering, how do I get you guys to be friends of the court? I mean, I want to donate $100 tonight. I want to donate $50 a month. I want to do this. I know 440 foreclosures last month alone in our area. Mm-hmm. And for me, this is a crusade. It's a ministry. It's not just a happenstance.
Well,
and I study every night UR Law, and I study Brad Kipton. I'm now hooked up with you guys.
What I'm trying to do is this. I started this course some months back because I thought I should have started this earlier, but really I wasn't ready for it to start early enough, and I had too much things going on. But now was the right timing, because it's God's timing, really. It's not even my timing.
Absolutely.
But the point
is,
I come to the realization that I can't be the only one to know all this stuff.
People need
to understand my discoveries and things I've learned from other people. You know, I learn a lot from other people. And I do a lot of research. So I'm learning ultimately from other people, no matter how you get to it. But I've collected all this stuff, and my whole life for 15 years has been focused in on this. And research.
What's your best five courses? Number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
I'm sorry, say what?
What courses would you suggest I take immediately, the first five?
Oh, well, one course is the major course that covers all the courses, and that would be Court Access in the Common Law. If you come to our education courses, you'll find that we have the Foundation Study, Constitutional Course 101, Introduction. Those are free courses. The Civil Course, Civics Course, that's free. Government by Consent Course, you have to be a premium member, $5 a month or more. We have a free militia course, and then we have also Jury Administrators Accredited Course. Okay, anybody becoming a jury administrator has to take all these courses. But they also take the free access course here. This is the course that is the most in-depth. This teaches our heritage. It teaches the common law, the rules of common law. It teaches the court process, jurisdiction. It teaches everything you need to know to walk in a court and command. Everything you need. And now anything I'm missing or anything I learn as time goes on, I will add to the course. People who join the course will get an email from me letting them know, hey, we added another Saturday, or maybe we'll come on kind of a live session one more to add new things, okay? So if I need new, I'll do that. If I have to have a correction, I'll put out something and record something and people, and it'll be added to the course. But this is it. It's called Court Access, and it's under Education Starts Here, Court Access in the Common Law. You click on that, and you can read the information on this. Hold on. Gives you the instructions and the course. This is the only course. This costs $125 for this course. Okay?
Not a problem.
And it's a course.
I can buy it tonight.
Thousands of dollars, I'll tell you right now. You're going to learn more.
Now, where do I subscribe to this course? How do I pay it, or how do I sign up for it?
This page tells you everything. Sign up for the Court Access in the Common Law. You can do it by credit card, which is the fastest way, or you could do it by check or money order, which is another way. That's got to get to me, and then we've got to push the buttons on our end, and that might take about 4 or 5 days to get that done. But if you do it by credit card, it's automatic. You'll get an email with the information on the course and how to join the course and where the recorded course is and all the information that we have on the course. So it's all the information here. And then once you're in the course, when you come and highlight Court Access in the Common Law, you'll see these two links. You won't see these two links unless you're in the course. Only the people in the course get to this. So this one is all the recorded videos. Okay, let me open that up. That's all the recorded videos since the beginning, okay, that we have recorded. We've been recording Saturdays. Each session is about 4 hours long, so it's quite lengthy. Again, this is a full-blown course. You're gonna have the ability to walk in court and do whatever you need to do. Now, the other thing, this is under the same place, okay? You'll have the table of contents, okay? And when you open that page up, all right, this is what we follow through on introduction. This was the next session, which was the essentials, and I think there was like four parts to go through all the essentials, okay? And then we have the pleadings, how do pleadings work, the processes, motions and orders and all kinds of different things. This was the causes of actions and evidence and affidavits. This is on defenses. This is on motions, memorandums of law. This is very powerful, these memorandums of law. That's where we got all the information under judicial foreclosure, and that is extremely powerful because it shows the fraud, and it lays it out. But again, you got to be able to talk to these people the right way. Make them say, "Who the heck is this guy?" Okay, that's the attitude, because you're coming in like a lawyer on the one end, but you're coming in with things that they never even heard before, and you're coming with power and authority because we're footnote heavy. All papers that we write are footnote heavy. Everything has authorities. Everything has authority.
I have one more question, brother. When if I were to file in a small claims court, I can only file like up to $5,000. Can I file $5,000 silver dollars, Morgan silver dollars?
Yeah, I don't think you'll get away with that. No, I don't think you're going to get away with that.
I'm sorry?
I don't think you'll be able to get away with that. They're going
to
look at
so you. I'd have to file that in the big court, right?
Well, anytime you go in a court, the first thing you should do when you know you have to go into a court. Number one, you want to look at the jurisdiction of that court, okay? Number two, you want to know who that judge is. You want to look up the judge's history. You can Google. You get all the information you want, okay? Then you be careful to read. You read every single utterance in the papers that are set forth by the enemy, okay? Everything. You have to understand everything they're saying. If they refer to a case or they refer to – well, first of all, we don't have to get too heavy into cases because they're trying to use case law and saying this judge ruled this way, therefore in this case is similar to this, and therefore, judge, you have to rule this way in this case too. Your response to that, a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing, and that rules the court, period.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So you got to respond with common law principles. The rules of that's the rule of common law, which is just common sense, really. Rules of common law are common sense. It makes sense. Everybody should understand it and agree with it.
Yeah, what language are you using? What dictionary is this coming out of?
Well, I use Black's Fourth particularly. I also have the Second, and I refer to that occasionally, and I have Bovier's. And we have downloads for that, too. on our page. Let's see, on our table, you can download those books. We have them here. And,
okay.
And we have, when you go through this, if you've got a little bit of a background, you're going to see there's so much stuff here. There's a lot of stuff. And so you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff to be able to work with. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And
okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'm praying for you. God bless.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Godspeed.
All right.
Okay, I got to go. I know we have a few people left in the queue, but I got to leave. My son's...
John, could you do me a favor? Mary Ann is next in the queue. I forward her that fellow's information from our Saturday class. Could you ask her whether or not she received that information?
Yeah, Mary Ann, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Oh, this is her husband holding on to her phone for a second. here, Mary Ann, I have a question for you.
Oh, your question for me. Oh, hold on a second. Yes.
Mary Ann, I forwarded some information from a fellow in our Saturday course. He wanted to discuss HOAs with you. I wanted to know if you received that email.
Let me see. By the way, I was finally able to download or locate all the information that I had. Well, not all of it, but most of it.
That's wonderful. If you get the chance, please forward it if you can. I would love to have it and keep it in my quiver, if you will. But John has to run. If you would, just look out for it. It's from me. It'll be either Eric Levy or Eric at National Liberty Alliance. It'll be Eric Andrew Levy. And then the fellow's name is Mars, M-A-R-S. And he's having some trouble with his HOA, and I thought that it'd be nice if our community could help one another out. And anyway, I yield. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's back in your court there, John.
John might have already...
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I was muted. I forgot to put my mic back on. Sorry. All right, Mary Ann, if you have any questions or anything that you need answered and you're in the course, you can hit me up on Saturday or next Monday. I'm sorry for this. And try to get into the queue early if it's a Monday. You know, try to get up in as early as possible.
Oh, absolutely. there was a meeting tonight, and I told them about UN Agenda 21 and sustainability and all this stuff. Because we're
we can shut all that down if people get up to do government by consent. Get a committee of safety going, and we'll shut them right down.
Absolutely.
It takes a little time to form it to be able to have that power and authority and knowledge, but that you have to start somewhere, and now's the time to start. But with that, I got to go, Marianne, and appreciate your time, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you. God bless you all.
All right, thank you. Godspeed, everyone. Got to go. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, or those in the course, we'll see you on Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you.